a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. The South Dakota Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. The Secretary will please call the minutes.
Senators Krebs?
Here.
Lucas?
Here.
Monroe?
Here.
Amdahl?
Here.
Otten?
Here.
Ewing?
Here.
Valley?
Here. Quorum is present. Out of courtesy to the people in the audience, the people who are going to testify, and to the senators here on the committee, would you please turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate? Thank you. The chair will entertain a motion on the minutes. They have been provided to you either by internet or in your black folders. Then moved by, was it Senator Otten? And seconded by Senator Krebs. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved as written. On behalf of the chair and the committee, I want to welcome everyone here to the meeting this morning and also to those that are listening on the internet. We have a page here today. Would you step over to the microphone, introduce yourself, and tell us what you're going to do with the rest of your life?
Hi, I'm Miranda Kane. I'm from Sioux Falls, go to school at Brandon Valley. And this fall, I'll be attending the University of Sioux Falls. I'll be playing softball for them and studying English and media.
Thank you. If you do have handouts this morning, give them to the page, and she will distribute them behind the counter here. And if you're testifying, be sure and sign in. On the podium over there, there's a sign-up sheet so that the secretary gets your name spelled right. Sometimes people come up to testify and they say, my name is Bill Jones. And the secretary said, what was his name? So if you do that for us so that she can legibly read it. Thank you. This morning, we have three bills. I don't see anything that's procedurally any different than normal. So at this point, I would open up the testimony for Senate Bill 41. Would you please introduce yourself and tell us who you represent and begin?
Good morning. My name is John Brewers. I'm a captain for the Motor Carrier Division of the Highway Patrol under Department of Public Safety. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This morning we bring you Senate Bill 41. This is an act to allow other people than the Highway Patrol to inspect school buses. We want to make a minor change in the statute that says the Highway Patrol has to inspect them. We feel there's lots of other qualified individuals out there that can inspect these school buses and ensure the safety of the children as they go to and from school and school activities. What we're proposing to do is allow the bus companies who have mechanics on staffs, the school districts that have mechanics, private garages, things like that, that we will train, teach them the intricacies of the school bus portion of it, and then allow them to certify and inspect their own buses. The way bus inspections work now is every June, right after school gets out, there's kind of a mad scramble to get all buses prepared, ready to go, and the companies and school districts inspect them themselves, try to discover any possible repairs that may fail the bus, and then they have to get all that done with all of their buses in June, which is obviously a pretty good time crunch, especially for the larger school districts or the bus companies that have numerous buses to do. Once that's done, the Highway Patrol, we go to various locations throughout the state. Some locations we go to the bus company or school district themselves, and then some of the other nearby schools will come to that location, and we do the inspection. Now, the vast, vast majority of the school buses are in great condition, and we have no issues, but there are some that fail. When they fail, they have to get reinspected after the repairs have been made. Sometimes it's a very simple switch or an alarm that needs to, the wire needs tightened down again. Sometimes we have to replace some exhausts or a tie rod, things like that that require more significant repair. Then we have to do a reinspect. Well, the reinspects come in usually in July. If there's any problems there, or there's just a great number of those re-inspects to do, that's where we run into an even bigger time crunch, because in August, public safety has that little shindig out in Sturgis that we got to attend every year. By the time that's over with, school started, and now we've got school districts without buses. What we're proposing to do here is give the bus companies, the school districts, the time to inspect, repair, and maintain those vehicles throughout the summer. There's a burden upon the school districts because school bus drivers don't have a lot of reason to come to work every day in the summer. So in that short time period, they've got to call their school bus drivers back in to operate these buses, inspect them, and get them to the inspection sites back and forth. And there's, of course, a cost to the school district to do that. We have to send those folks out that are the highway patrol troopers and the motor carrier officers to those locations. So we cram a whole lot of things in that one time period where we feel it's going to be easier for the school districts, the bus companies, and the highway patrol if we can spread that time period out, allow the whole summer for them to get it done. Now, we're having several different options there. We'll train anybody that wants to learn how to do the school buses. Most commercial garages right now will inspect a commercial motor vehicle for its safety as required by South Dakota's laws, but they don't know the school bus portion of it. So we're going to teach them the school bus portion of that to make sure the inside of that school bus body is how it's supposed to be. And there's surprisingly a large amount of rules that a school bus has to comply with. Not that it's a surprise they have to comply with them, but as the model years changes, each model year has to comply with different things. Well, we've done a manual for that for our own folks that we'll pass on to anybody that wants to inspect those. The gentlemen that run the school and ladies that run the school buses every day, the mechanics in the bus barn, in the school districts and those private companies, that's who I call when I have a question on a regulation on a school bus. These folks are more than qualified. They have their facilities, and they've got the wherewithal to complete these inspections and do a quality job. I would say 99% of the bus operators that we come in contact with, they almost panic when we find a defect that would fail that bus. Not because that bus wouldn't be able to be used for a little while, because they have such pride in their workmanship. They want those kids to be safe, too. And I used to tease one of the guys I inspected, because I never saw him move so fast as when I found a little door buzzer that didn't work, because he'd be running to the shop faster than I could finish the bus inspection in order to get that deficiency corrected, so there wasn't an issue with that bus. So we don't see a drop in quality in these. The only concern I've heard on moving the system to allow others to do these inspections is, what about the small schools? What about that school that has one bus, the school district superintendent is the bus guy? Well, he's an educator, not a mechanic in most cases. He'll have the option that he can take that to a local commercial garage to get that inspected. He could co-op with the neighboring school district that has somebody to do those. They can trade services, a bus inspection for a ride for the cheerleaders to the football game, or a number of any things that they wish to do. Or, in the end, the Highway Patrol will still be doing bus inspections. We're not getting out of the business. We're just allowing more people in. And we think this will be a big benefit for the school districts and the Highway Patrol themselves. That's all I have for you. I'd be happy to stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents in the room? Okay. I think what we'll do is, if you'll just stand close by here, we'll get questions after we've heard all the proponents here, and then we'll come back to you, if that's all right.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. Tim Steichen with the South Dakota School Transportation Association. Just want to quickly let you know who we are. We're an association of school busing professionals from throughout the state. We have around 40 members, all the way from Rapid City Public Schools to the School Bus Inc. in Sioux Falls, down to Waverly South Shore and Iroquois, that has two contractors. They only have three or four buses. But anyway, we represent as many as we can and as a diverse group as we can. We were informed about this proposed change, and kind of, you know, we were a little surprised at the beginning, but after we as an association board of directors talked, we haven't come up with a reason that we would think it's a bad idea, at least the majority. I would be remiss to say it was unanimous. There was one individual that didn't think it was a good idea at the time I spoke to him. I've heard since then he may be thinking differently. But we think this could be or will be a good idea for many of the operations in the state, be it public or private owned. I don't have a whole lot else to say. I came more or less to be here for questions if you had any. Captain Brower's sort of covered everything that needs to be covered in this change. We do anticipate to be involved in the rulemaking process if this was to go forward, which we are grateful for as an association. I don't know if many of you know that the school busing industry in this country is the only transportation industry that governs itself for safety. The airlines, the trucks, the taxi cab drivers, they're all government run for safety. The school bus industry has a, what they call a national congress that's held every 5 years. And there, and I've attended that three times myself, there all the rules and regulations that most of the states kind of look at as far as what should our rules be are debated because they're in this book that's published. I didn't bring it. It's about yay thick. South Dakota adopts a number of pages out of that book that has to do with school bus standards and construction and then some operations. And it's the Captain Brower's referred to the changes in models and things like that. Every 5 years, that book is redone, and things get changed and tweaked a little bit, and then South Dakota Board, Department of Education adopts those changes, and that's where some of that comes in. So anyway, I will close at that and stand by for any questions you may have of me. Thank you.
Further proponent? Any further proponent? Last call for proponent. All right. Questions
by the committee for either of the two proponents. Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question for Captain Browers, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just reading through this, and it has been brought to our attention by the LRC staff here, on line 9 you do have the new language of an inspector approved, and then it says by the Division of Highway Patrol pursuant to 1329 subsection 6.1. And we're wondering, since we looked it up, there is no subsection 6.1 defined yet, if we shouldn't have just referred it to saying this refers to section 2 of this act on the next page, which is the new section. So what I'm saying again, Mr. Chair, if I may, is that I believe we may want to amend this to have corrected language by deleting pursuant to 1329-6.1 because that's not defined in statute yet as it is new language in Section 2. So we would amend that. My question is that was probably an oversight? And
yes, ma'am.
Okay. I think that's all for the questions. Follow-up, may I, Mr. Chair? Diverting from the language situation, I believe it says here that the buses are inspected every year before each school year, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And and I know this is separate from inspections, but do the drivers, I'm assuming, have to take some type of training as far as PTI and pre-trip inspections and what to look for before they operate that bus each day or each time. Is that correct? And I know that's not related to the inspection. That's related to the driver aspect of it.
The drivers are required to have continuing education and education as soon as they do come on board. I couldn't tell you the exact statutes, but I believe they have to have, rules. I believe they have to have 5 hours of education in the beginning and then every 5 years thereafter. And Mr. Steichen might be a better qualified answer for that because the Highway Patrol doesn't check on that. We participate in the education of that when requested just for sheer purposes of highway safety. We come in to help educate, not as a regulator of the education program for the drivers.
Thank you, Captain.
Senator Ewing has a question. Go ahead.
Not really a question. I just want to give my support for this bill. I think it was very well thought out. I think it'll save the districts and the bus company owners as well as the Highway Patrol time and money. In reference to Mrs. Krebs's comments, bus drivers have to have a CDL to operate a school bus, and so a lot of the concerns I think that you might have are covered under having a CDL as far as a walk-around inspection before they drive the vehicle and such. I just, I'm in total support of this. I think it's a good move, and I would be prepared to offer a motion if the chair so desires. With the amendment in place.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Amdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if you could quantify just the number, I don't know if you can do it, the number of bus inspections that must take place in this state. It's got to be huge.
Mr. Chairman, approximately 1,700 is what we do every summer in about a three-week period. You bet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Krebs. We'll go with Senator Lucas. He hasn't had one yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, if they have to go to a garage or something to get these bus inspections done, there'll be a charge for that, correct, or not?
Mr. Chairman, of course, that would be up to the business owner, but I'm sure there will be. I've heard of what I was told this morning by Mr. Steichen is there's a local shop in his area that when they do the commercial vehicles, they charge $50 for the power unit and $50 for the trailer. Now, if some deficiencies are discovered, they'll offer to repair those. If you get those repaired done, the cost of the inspection goes away. They absorb that into the cost of the repair. If there is no deficiencies, you pay for the inspection. Now, I can't say that would happen in every garage around South Dakota, but it's certainly plausible that would happen. And the bus are going to have the repairs anyway. But there will be a cost to the schools, districts, or the bus operators for the private garages. That's why we'll be happy to train their own staff where they can trade services.
Follow up.
Thank you. It kind of reminds me back. I remember we used to have our vehicles inspected annually and had to go to the dealers to do that, which I didn't think was a bad deal. But I was just wondering in the promulgation of rules that we should maybe include a cost in that too, rather than letting the dealers carte blanche set the fee, if maybe we should set that instead.
Mr. Chairman. I'll respectfully let you decide that or the Rules Committee if we want to put a cap on that.
Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a motion to amend Senate Bill 41 on line 9, delete the code 13-29-6.1 and replace with the words Section 2 of this Act. Delete the code 13-29-6.1 and replace with by stating Section 2 of this Act. So it should read in line 9, inspector approved by the Division of Highway Patrol pursuant to Section 2 of this Act. To certify that the
Is there a second to that motion? Second by Senator Amdahl. Any further discussion on that amendment?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the staff for catching that. And again, the reason we're making that adjustment is because it's not defined, 6.1 is not defined, and so I believe they're referring to the new definition, a new section on page 2 of this bill. I want to make that change. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chair, in efforts to make sure there's nothing hidden here or anything, I failed to point out the Highway Patrol inspects a large amount of nonprofit buses across South Dakota also, such as Pure Transit here in town. There's several across the state. Those folks are included in that as far as the training those folks to do those inspections. It's literally just a different color sticker and a couple of different criteria that's different. But they also are, we keep saying school bus, but those folks are also included in this program and statutes.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go back to the amendment that is on the floor here. If there is no further discussion, we'll take up the amendment. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll. It's a voice vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is passed. Before we go any further, I want to just stop right here. We're not through with the proponents and opponents, so we're going to take any action or whatever. We're going to wait till we get to discussion or action by the committee. There may be opponents. We haven't gone to the opponents yet, and we are not finished with questions. So if we can do that, we will just continue in that order. Thank you. Any further questions by the committee for either of the proponents? I have a couple. Captain Brower, do you have any concern with the old cliche of the fox guarding the hen house?
Mr. Chairman, certainly there's an issue there. We also plan to do re-inspects or cross inspections throughout the year. What we would intend to do is we would contact a school district or a bus company, say, hey, tomorrow we want to be there about 10 o'clock. We want to look at about four or five buses from you. We'll come in, we'll inspect those, make sure those are still safe. No one's more concerned about the children being safe on the road than public safety. I have a 6- and 8-year-old at home that ride a bus every day, and we're certainly not going to allow the quality of the inspection program lapse in South Dakota. So we will be doing the cross-checking. We're going to do the continuing education and recertification of the inspectors to make sure these are still going down the road in a safe manner.
So in other words, there will be, I don't want to call them this way, I guess I would call it a surprise inspection type thing to see how they're doing. Is that, will the buses be completed at that point and you're going to look at them, or how will that process work?
We're going to work some of those out in the rules with the bus contractors and the Board of Education, or excuse me, the school bus on the from the school districts, not the private companies, both of those parties. But I wouldn't say it's a complete surprise, like we'll just show up on a random Tuesday. We can do that if we need to, but the idea there is those buses should be ready and be able to pass an inspection 365 days of the year. We want those to do that. So it takes that continuing inspection, those walk-around inspections from day to day, to make those happen. So we're going to come in, like I said, we're not going to just show up. We'll probably have some sort of announcement there, enough to, so the bus companies and the school districts have the staff to support the inspections, but I wouldn't say enough time to go through every bus on the lot and make major repairs.
Okay. Does the Highway Patrol have a fee now for inspecting these buses, or is that free of charge?
It's free of charge, as it will continue to be.
Okay. How about other states? Do other states do a similar handle the situation in a similar manner?
It varies from state to state across the nation, as with many programs. I haven't heard of one specifically that has the program just like we do. And to some extent, every state's, usually the Highway Patrol or the state police, have the overall jurisdiction over the bus inspections. Right now, the state of Nebraska, they do their own inspections because the Highway Patrol does not. I believe the further east you go, there less involvement with the Highway Patrol and state police. I couldn't give you the details of each state's, but I know Iowa, they have about 4 to 5 staff that 365 days a year, that's all they do is bus inspections. They literally just go from town to town and inspect buses throughout the year.
Okay. question. It's probably kind of like a Senator Amdahl question, him being an engineer. Out of the 1,700, what would you say is the number of inspections that you find some type of problem? And maybe it's a percent. Is it like a 10%, 1%? Do you have any idea?
We've never actually kept track. We keep the inspection forms. We follow up on the re-inspects, but we've never created a database that would be queryable or we can find some of these answers. We intend to do that now, obviously. Anecdotally, I would say roughly only, I would be surprised if 5 to 15% of the buses fail in South Dakota.
Okay. Okay. Further questions? Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're talking about doing occasional spot checks on the people that monitor themselves. Is that written somewhere, too, or are we just hoping you're going to be there forever to watch it for us?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The statute still doesn't relieve the Highway Patrol of doing the inspections throughout the year. It just allows more people in. So and unless you make that statute go away, the Highway Patrol is always going to be involved in this. So we're here to stay.
Further questions? Thank you, Captain. Are there any opponents of this legislation? Any opponents? Last call for opponents. If there are no opponents, there's no need for a rebuttal. We'll move for committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass.
Been moved by due pass by Senator Monroe. Is there a second? Senator Ewing has seconded. Any discussion on this motion? Senator Monroe, do you have any discussion?
No, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a wonderful bill.
The motion on the floor will be to pass this as amended. If that's fine with Ms. Monroe, we change your motion a little bit to read to pass as amended.
Second.
All right. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed say nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Amdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye. Senate Bill 41 has been approved as amended and will go to the floor. We will now move to Senate Bill 45, which permits certain persons to renew their operator's license over a longer period of time. Senate Bill 45 is now open for public comment. Ms. Gerber, please introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cindy Gerber, and I'm the Director of the Driver Licensing Program in the Department of Public Safety. Bringing Senate Bill 45 today for your consideration to provide us with the authority to provide a convenience to South Dakota citizens renewing their driver's licenses and ID cards. Senate Bill 45 allows a citizen, a national, or a permanent resident who has a federally compliant South Dakota driver's license or ID card to renew that driver's license or ID card through the mail or through an online process once in a 10-year period. This will help shorten the wait times at the busier driver exam stations, and it will be a great convenience and service in the more rural areas of the state where some applicants currently drive anywhere from 25 to 50 miles to reach an exam station. With the online or mail-in renewal available, those rural applicants will be able to perform every other renewal period without traveling to an exam station. It should be noted that a person may not use the mail or online process if they've changed any of their personal identifying information since their last renewal, including their name. Those changes must be done in person. Additionally, if they're reinstating a driver license after a suspension, revocation, disqualification, or cancellation, they won't be able to use this process. However, they may use it if they are just changing their address. The applicant will need to submit two documents showing proof of their current address, and they must submit an approved statement of a vision condition. If this bill is passed, we will work with the Optometrists and Ophthalmologists Association to get our medical form, or the vision form, I should say, out on their website and in their hands so that they can offer that to their people that are coming to them for vision exams. excuse me. This bill also gives us rulemaking authority to outline the specifics of this process. I would ask for your support of this bill to allow South Dakotans to renew their driver's licenses every other five-year cycle without appearing at an exam station. But thank you for your consideration, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gerber. Are there other proponents of this legislation? Other proponents? If there are none, are there any questions by the committee? Senator Amdahl.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question to ask you, and this is probably kind of offbeat, but what happens when a person dies? I always think of identity theft, and if they up their, say they pass on, somebody wants to get their identity with a license, my question is, what happens to their license? How can you monitor that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Amdahl. That's a very good question. If a person dies in South Dakota, Vital Records gets that, and their system updates our system with that deceased on record. So once it shows deceased, then that record, the license is no longer valid. Law enforcement checks that. They're able to see that as well. We do also do a check through the Social Security Administration, and through that system we can also see if a person is deceased. So we've got a couple of different ways there where we can check for that, and that, you know, that is a really good measure in preventing identity theft for someone trying to come in and get a license under someone's name that's deceased.
Mm-hmm. I'll just do a follow-up on that. So in other words, if I get pulled over and I produce someone's driver's license who is deceased, the officer is going to know already, because it's already come up on his screen. He's checked the license plate, and he can check and see if that, when he goes back to his car and puts in that name, would it be there that it's deceased? Would that be correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that it is. It's on our system, and I want to verify that with Captain Brewers to make sure that they do see that. Do you see the deceased when you do a check on the DL system? Would you see that they're deceased? It's on our record, so I think it is on the DL-59 as well that you do.
I've never ran a,
okay,
a license.
Okay, okay. I can... I will verify that for sure and make sure that law enforcement gets that. It's my understanding they do, but I want to make sure that's true.
I think that would be partially what Senator Amdahl mm-hmm. is looking at, is somebody that has stolen someone else's ID and is using that and mm-hmm. then gets pulled over and thinks, well, I'm not going to have this appear on my license, this speeding ticket. I'll have it pulled on my Uncle Bill, who passed mm-hmm. away, and I got his driver's license. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm guessing that's kind of the thing that the Senate...
Yeah.
Yes. So if you get back, would you do this? Would you get that to all members of the committee? That would be helpful.
I certainly will. I'm 99% sure that it is. I know it's on our system, but I just want to make sure it gets passed to law enforcement. So I'll verify that, and, yes, I will get back in touch with all of you.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Lucas.
Thank you. Could you clarify on the change of name, how that would affect this proposed law?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Lucas. On a name change, and this is a new name change, so once they've been through the process and they've got a federally compliant card and they've shown all of their previous name changes, they don't need to show them again. But say if I have a federally compliant card and now I get married or divorced and I change my name, in order to change that name, I actually need to appear in person to do that. A couple of reasons for that. One, it's from a security standpoint. We need to see the documents, make sure it's legal. And another, the signature that we have on file isn't going to be the signature of the new name that you're changing to. So we have to have you come in and get a new signature. We don't have the capability to change your signature through a renewal process.
Go ahead.
So in those cases, then, that individual who's had a name change would need to bring the proof of residence and birth certificate, Social Security number as well?
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Thank you, Senator Lucas. Only the ones that don't already have a federally compliant card need to bring all those documents again. If they've been through it already and now they're changing their name, what they need to bring in is their federally compliant driver's license, two proofs of address, and the name change document. They don't need their birth certificate again and their Social Security card and any other name changes they may have had prior.
So, in other words, what you're looking for, if you've got the prior compliant driver's license, all that stuff has been checked, you're just trying to find out that you've married to Jones now instead of Smith, and so now the last name is Jones. That's the only thing you're really checking for besides the address.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further questions by the committee? There are no questions. We'll move to opponents. Are there any opponents of this legislation? Any opponents? Last call for opponents. If there are no opponents, there are no need for rebuttal. So at this point, we'll close to public testimony and move to committee discussion and or action. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move due pass, Senate Bill 45.
It's been moved due pass by Senator Lucas.
Seconded.
Seconded by Senator Krebs. Any comments on that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While this complies with what the governor said, we want more people being online instead of in line, and this will definitely meet that goal. There may be a small fee for people to go online and do this, a couple dollars or something like that, but I think most people would be glad to do that to get their driver's license renewed online or through the mail rather than having to go and stand in line for a long period of time and risk being missing part of work or some other appointment.
Further comments? No further comments. We will vote on the motion, and the secretary will please call the roll.
Senators Krebs?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Amdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Ewing?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye. Senate Bill 45 has passed the committee unanimously and will be reported to the floor. We will now take testimony on Senate Bill 48, which authorizes the Transportation Commission to establish rules regarding the placement of newspaper vending machines. Welcome again to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. My name's Bill Nevin. I'm with the Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 48 is an act to authorize the Transportation Commission to establish rules governing the allowance, placement, and maintenance of newspaper vending machines at interstate rest areas. South Dakota has in place three separate statutes that essentially prohibit any commercial activity at an interstate rest area, with the exception of soft drink vending machines operated for the benefit of a visually impaired vendor licensed by the Division of Service to the Blind and Visually Impaired. And that exception was mandated by Congress. Despite those statutes, however, we have allowed the sale of newspapers through newspaper vending machines at rest areas as a result of litigation subsequent to the passage of those statutes, federal court litigation. In that litigation, it was the state's position that under our state statutes, no commercial vending machines of any nature were allowed at a rest area, with the exception of those soft drink vending machines specifically exempted. The federal court ultimately ruled that the right to circulate newspapers through vending machines was a protected First Amendment activity, and that while an interstate rest area is not a traditional public forum like the courthouse steps or the public square for purposes of First Amendment analysis, the South Dakota statutes created an impermissible blanket prohibition on any First Amendment activity. Because of that, the court held those three state statutes were facially unconstitutional as being overbroad. South Dakota was therefore enjoined from relying on any of those three statutes to categorically prohibit newspaper vending machines at our interstate rest areas. However, the court went on, because an interstate rest area is not a traditional public forum, as I indicated, it is permissible to impose reasonable regulations governing the time, place, and manner of the exercise of that First Amendment right. And those regulations are subject to judicial review only for reasonableness. The court concluded, however, that our blanket prohibition was not reasonable and therefore enjoined us from prohibiting that activity at our rest areas. As a result, we are without legal authority to make an outright prohibition against newspaper vending machines at interstate rest areas. However, we can regulate the time, place, and manner of the distribution of those newspapers in order to preserve and facilitate the primary use for which those rest areas were constructed, as long as those regulations are reasonable. Since the federal court decision, various newspaper vending machines have been placed by their owner or operators at our rest areas. To my knowledge, none of those are daily or weekly newspapers published in South Dakota. And I did check with the South Dakota Newspaper Association, advising them that we were bringing this bill and asking for their comment on it. And I posed that question, and Mr. Bordick indicated to me that as best he had been able to determine at that time, there were no South Dakota daily or weekly newspapers that are distributing newspapers at interstate vending machines. They are primarily, if not exclusively, non-local periodical publications. Unfortunately, we've seen that they place these machines on occasion at locations that impede access to the building, perhaps bunching them up by the door, which creates further difficulty for snow removal activities and maintenance. We need to move them out of the way in order to perform those maintenance activities. We're also seeing some of these machines are not being maintained in working order, but are in a terrible state of disrepair, both functionally and aesthetically. In addition, litter from these publications, from these machines, has sometimes been an issue. Currently, we have no regulatory authority over these machines or the folks who operate them. DOT has been growing concerned about this issue and the ability of our travelers to use our facilities unimpeded. We're concerned about the orderly appearance of our rest area grounds and the ability of folks to perform proper winter maintenance and other activities that we need to at those areas. In addition, our interstate rest areas are often the first in-state stop for travelers coming to or through South Dakota. The appearance and functioning of those rest areas can, and I suspect often does, affect the people's first impressions of our state. We would like that to be a good impression. We simply want to put in place some standards for placing and maintaining those vending machines as other states are doing. This bill amends those three statutes to which I earlier referred. Though it's somewhat unorthodox, I would explain by starting with Section 2 of the bill. Section 2 of the bill amends SDCL 31-29-83, which currently prohibits any commercial activity at rest areas with the exception of those soft drink machines operated by the visually impaired, as I indicated. With this amendment to that statute, also exempted would be newspaper vending machines, thereby conforming our law to the federal court decision. Going on, Section 1 of the bill then amends SDCL 31-8-16. That statute, contained within our controlled access statutes, currently exempts, again, only those soft drink machines operated by the visually impaired from the prohibition on commercial activity within a controlled access highway right-of-way. This bill would now amend that to exempt vending machines as authorized by Section 2 of the bill, which would now also include those newspaper vending machines. Similarly, Section 3 of the bill would amend SDCL Section 31-32-13. That's a statutory chapter governing highway obstructions and defects. Currently, that statute makes it a misdemeanor to maintain any business, the nature of which requires the use by customers of any part of the right-of-way of a state trunk highway. Again, exempting only vending facilities operated for the benefit of the visually impaired. Section 3 of the bill would amend that section as well, similar to Section 1, to exempt vending machines authorized by Section 2 of the bill, again, now also including newspaper vending machines. If this legislation passes, the department would be pursuing the rule promulgation process to put in place some standards for folks to maintain and take care of those machines and operate them. And, of course, the procedure for the establishment of those rules would provide for full opportunity for input from anyone affected and, of course, the public generally. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would conclude my testimony and stand by for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Nevin. Don't go too far. Further proponents of this legislation. Mr. Secretary, good to see you.
Please good to see you. Good morning, yourself. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Hagan. I'm the Secretary of Tourism for the state of South Dakota. We are a strong proponent of this bill. This summer, I'll give you one example of why we are such a strong proponent. I was out traveling the state. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I stopped at the Chamberlain Information Center, or West area. We had just experienced one of our famous South Dakota summer storms. And as I drove up to the Information Center, there were these vending machines, several of which had blown over. The newspapers were scattered about. It was about 10 or 10:30 in the morning. We already had visitors, a lot of visitors, who were visiting that information center. Like I said, the papers were strewn about. Many of them were wet. Many of them looked like they had been there probably for 3 years without being replaced. And as I walked up to the information center, there was a couple from Arkansas and a couple from Minnesota who were commenting on what a beautiful state, but what a horrible mess this was. And it actually was impeding their ability to get into the information center. We spend millions of dollars to promote South Dakota, our great faces and great places. Oftentimes, these information centers are the very first impression that our visitors have of this state. We have top-notch staff who work in those information centers who do an incredible job of rolling out the red carpet for our visitors. Our DOT does a wonderful job of maintaining those information centers. If we were able, and if you would support simply setting some standards whereby these vending machines might look uniform, would not be such an eyesore to our visiting public, we would strongly support that. I know there are other states, my colleagues around the country in their tourism departments, who also struggle with this issue and are trying to find an answer to bringing about some uniformity and to replacing the eyesore with something that looked a little better. Again, we don't oppose them being there. We just want something that looks pleasing to our visitors. So with that being said, I stand by for questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Further proponents of Senate Bill 48. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Smith from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I am a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Newspaper Association. We rise today to support this legislation, primarily from the standpoint that we have no objection whatsoever to it. We want to thank the Department of Transportation for consulting with us and finding out where we stand on the issue. The vending machines targeted by this bill typically do not belong to the members of our newspaper association. We're more concerned about any regulations that will be handed down pursuant to the bill, but we'll be involved in that process throughout. So, the newspaper association has no objection to this bill, and we think it makes sense for South Dakota. So I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 48. Further proponents. There are no further proponents. We'll take questions from the committee of the proponents. Any questions? No questions. They're all off the hook. All right, we will move to opponents. Are there any opponents of Senate Bill 48? Opponents of Senate Bill 48. Last call for opponents of Senate Bill 48. If there are no opponents, there is no need for rebuttal. So we will close it to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action by the committee. Senator Ewing.
Mr. Chair, I would move for a due pass on this bill.
And moved by Senator Ewing to due pass.
Second.
And it's been seconded by Senator Lucas. Discussion on that motion. Senator Armdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm in support of this as an old highway engineer. I worked on some of the upgrades on that stuff. And you're so right. This is the first impression people get when they go into the state. And I do want to commend the DOT for doing a good job. All you have to do is travel down south and see what some of their rest areas are, and you'll appreciate South Dakota. But that's my comment. I support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? If there are none, those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The Secretary will call the roll. We're voting on Senate Bill 48.
Senators Krebs.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Armdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Thalley.
Aye.
Seven ayes.
Senate Bill 48 has received a unanimous vote of the committee and will move to the Senate floor. With that, I want to thank everyone this morning. I'm going to assign bills this morning from Senator Lucas. If you would take these to your caucus. And so you don't feel left out, I would ask if you would also take Senate Bill 48 to the floor. Would you do that? Senator Otten, would you take Senate Bill 45 to the caucus and the floor? And Senator Armdahl, would you take Senate Bill 41? All right. Further comments by the committee? Any other business to take up? If there is none, the chair would entertain a motion for adjournment. Been moved by Senator Armdahl. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Krebs. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.